Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
You gotta give us a shot.
You know what?
You gotta give us a shot.
Hey, whoever's got that, turn that off. Just turn that off.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Clapback Sports. I am your host, Demage. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Tino. What's up, Tino?
What is going on, guys? You know what? We've had some time to feel better, but if I'm being honest, I don't feel great. I still kind of feel dead inside, but I feel good. I feel all right. We're here to talk Giants because that's what we do here, unfortunately. And yeah. Maze, you're muted. This is a great start. Already a great start.
Murph.
There he is. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to talk with you again. Pretty sure I got to play that last year too, boys.
Now, I think it took us longer last
year. Yeah, well, you're just a whiny bitch. Why don't you go join Ethan's podcast? Because all they've been doing is crying all fucking week also, so.
I cry and just like to see you win.
Just a whiny bitch.
Beat ourselves on Thursday, boys. Not the Redskins. Redskins didn't beat the Giants.
Yeah.
Giants beat the Giants on Thursday.
That's every week.
The Giants. I'm not going to be over it for a while. I'm really not. I'm not. This is as bad as that Cam Newton game. But I think it's even worse this time because we beat the shit out of ourselves. Plus, you guys know it's a little bit of a rivalry for me down here.
Yeah, but who cares about you? So, I mean, start off the podcast the right way, right? So, question has to be asked. Tino, do you love your mother?
Well, I'm glad you brought this up. I was going to be like, well, we can't get into Giant stuff without addressing a few things. One, you didn't plug anything yet, but we normally don't get that until like 15 minutes in anyways. But I do love my mother. Not as much as Murph loves his mother, though. Murph loves his mother way more than I do.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems apparent, right? Like the woman that gave birth to you, that carried you for 9 months, right? Like, I mean, there seems to be a special bond there between most sons and most mothers, right?
Yeah. Mama's boy, you know? They say daddy's girl, mama's boy. Like, it's always just like that, Mage, you know?
Absolutely, Tino. And it's that way for a reason, right? And you would think if you were the only son, right? So it's like, who else is a mother going to show all their affection towards? So knowing all this, I mean, how does one forget their mother's birthday? Murph?
Nobody's birthday was forgot. I just forgot we had dinner tonight.
Oh, wait, you forgot your mother's birthday? Oh, man.
Look who's here. Look who made it in time.
He did. We had our doubts.
I'm such a good fucking coworker. Mm.
Yeah, you are. You put your podcast mates over your own mother, which I don't feel great about, but I'm honored and respectfully want to say thanks for that, you know?
Well, just continue.
Look, Ma, I got a podcast at 8 o'clock. I got to go. Fuck your cake, all right? I got to go, Mom.
We've had the same lasagna each of the last fucking 20 years of my life.
Doesn't this just solidify the sick, unhealthy obsession that we have with the Giants?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does. And we're still fucking here. We're still going to be fucking stoked on Sunday when they run out for that team. So as pissed off as I am, it's just another weekend, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, early.
I do have to say one thing, though. Although the podcast won't come out till tomorrow. Happy birthday to Murph's mom.
Mama Murph.
Mama Murph.
Shout out Mama Murph. She won't be listening, but.
Maybe your father could play for her.
Yeah, you know, maybe I will I'll cut that out and send it to her tomorrow just for you guys.
Well, she has to hear the whole opening episode.
Yeah, she should.
So make sure you follow us on Twitter at @clapback_sports. Follow us on Instagram at @clapback_sports. Follow Tino at @TinoRodriguez_ at the end. And I am @TheMage_NFL. So let's get right into it, guys. The Giants lost a heartbreaker to the Washington Redskins, 30-29. I'm going to start with some real good news first.
God.
And then we'll pass it around.
Sure.
Giants put up 29 points. This is the second most points that the Giants have put up under Jason Garrett. Let's go, baby!
They still played offense like they were scared to win the game. So not acceptable to me. Down the stretch, we played not to lose down the stretch. Here's my first comment. The game shouldn't have been that close. We shouldn't have been that close. It's ridiculous that we were even in it at the end to blow it the way we did. But honestly, that's why, like, when I looked back at it, I was like, I'm not surprised. You know, circle back to last week. Like, the things that stick out in my head are not the field goal, are not the bullshit offside. It's the two play 75 yard drive. That one hurts the most, actually. If I just want to lead with something, that one hurts the most. We got momentum. Offense showed us something. Obviously, then there's like a slant and drop down the stretch. Like, we had the game. At that point, we had the game. And once I saw the two-play 75-yard drive, I was like, this isn't our game to win. It was over. It was cooked. It was cooked.
I mean, the show notes, we talk about the two-play 75-yard drive later on.
Just opening comments. General thoughts.
But, no, that's good. I love it. Between you and Murph.
The Giants lost the game. My opening comments is that the Giants lost the game well before that field goal. They did, my opinion. Heinicke's interception to Bradbury.
Bury the lead, Tino. 29 points. Second most. Let's go.
I'm supposed to circle jerk two-hand fucking Indian burn tug fucking Jason Garrett for putting together an opening script where he actually put his fucking mobile quarterback in positions to run the ball, Mage. I'm not literally patting Jason Garrett on the back for doing his fucking job. It's literally what we've been saying you have to do. He's known he's had to do this for a year and a half. Literally, it took until week 5 against Washington for him to run the ball with fucking Danny. Thank God it only took him until week 2, but it wasn't that difficult to do. I'm sorry. Imagine how well your offense could be when you give your fucking mobile quarterback some design runs. Like, Jesus Christ, man.
Daniel Jones, first highest PFF grade of his career passing.
No interceptions, no fumbles. We love
no
that.
No interceptions, no fumbles. Actually,
no interceptions in 11 games.
Brendan put out a tweet, I believe it was yesterday or the day before. Since, what is it, week 8 of last year, Daniel Jones only has 3 interceptions. Right? That's a number, Murph?
Yeah, I thought the number was he hasn't thrown one in the last 11 games, but it's a long time, regardless.
So, I mean, when you think about other quarterbacks over this period or time, I mean, I know that Daniel Jones gets shit on a lot for, you know, his fumbles, and rightfully so, but, I mean, you know, they talk about coming into the league, rookie year. One, Daniel Jones produced much better as a rookie than he did his second year, but albeit that's where he had his most turnovers as well. So he gets knocked for being the most turnover prone quarterback, even though he's dialed that down quite a bit from last season. So what were your thoughts about the Washington game, Murph?
Well, I mean, you want me to say positive? Obviously that's the first piece. I mean, I saw my franchise quarterback, man. I saw Danny controlling the offense like he used to control the offense in 2019. He did play a little scared still. I would have liked him to take a couple shots to Galladay, but I get it. I mean, for losing 2 offensive linemen in a week, he didn't look like the shell-shocked Danny we saw the week before. Say whatever you want. Daniel heard the noise in the last week somehow, shape, or form. Don't know where, what media outlet, social media, what it was, but Daniel knew that eyes were all over Daniel. And he produced, man. And I think that's probably why I'm so upset, because I saw our quarterback, who's had all these question marks and all this shit piled on him for the last 2 years, control our offense, run the RPO like it was his job, and really, really, honestly, was let down by his team. And it sucks because all we've wanted is for our quarterback and our O-line to be good. And our fucking O-line is more than serviceable right now. Andrew Thomas did not even let Chase Young get to Danny. I believe he got on the other side against Solder once. But, I mean, Andrew Thomas played a hell of a game. The dudes that had to step in for Gates, Bredesen, Billy Price. I mean, Billy Price looked like he struggled a bit, but he made it work, man.
Well, that's one thing. That's one thing also, Murph, that you alluded to. But we also lost Nick Gates, a captain this game. Very early on, broke his leg. And then Bredesen had to come in for Nick Gates on the left side of that line. Starting offensive line to begin the game was Andrew Thomas, Nick Gates, Billy Price, Will Hernandez, Nate Solder. Bredesen comes in for Nick Gates. But still, overall, the offensive line played really well throughout the rest of the game. Now, heading into the season, the one thing that concerned us the most was this offensive line, okay? Especially after the Patriots game. Tino knows that, right? We were there, Tino. But after the Patriots game, a lot of people were concerned about the offensive line. For 2 weeks now, the offensive line has held up really well. The offensive line was top 10. 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks in, sorry, 2 weeks in a row on pass rush win rate. That's really good. That's what you need out of this. Last week, we saw a whole different game plan out of Jason Garrett. We saw a different Daniel Jones. I was the one that put a tweet out about Daniel Jones being dead, and I retweeted during that game. I said, regardless of the outcome of this game, Daniel Jones has responded to the criticism. And he played his ass off, man. And, I mean, Kenny Golladay was targeted 8 times. He only caught 3 passes, though. Whereas opposed to Sterling Shepard was targeted 10 times, caught 9 passes for 94 yards. So I'll eat some crow on that one. Right now it's looking good. Both you and Tino had said that Sterling Shepard was a wide receiver one heading in. You know, I was one of those people. I thought Kadarius Toney might have possibly spelled danger for Sterling Shepard, but restructured his contract. He's almost, you know, you can't get rid of him now or next year. So he's here to stay. But before we move on to the offensive side of ball, Tino, you had something else to say?
No, I love what Danny did. I love what Danny did in the game. I kind of love how they used him. I hope to see him more consistent. But you kind of noted on it. I wish I saw a little bit more because I do think he missed some guys. I know he played a phenomenal game, and that's nitpicky. But, you know, it came out earlier today about the comments about Golly kind of looking like he was yelling at Danny. He said he was yelling at Garrett. Either way, I think he was yelling at Danny. I think it was kind of justified. There were some plays there that he missed. But look, I think that has to do with chemistry. I think that has more to do with chemistry.
Somebody had to yell at Jason Garrett, right? I'm glad that it was Kenny Golladay. Somebody had to yell at him for the play calling and everything else, and it was horrific. Now, Danny did a lot better on second reads this game as well. You can tell he hung in the pocket a lot, and he was able to get it to different receivers. He took some shots deep, right? There were none of that stick curl routes. There were some of them, but not nearly as much, right? One thing that we talked about, I believe it was on this podcast, or maybe I said it privately, but you can still have a short passing game while still getting yards after the catch by keeping your routes slants, right, or somewhat vertical. They don't have to be sticks or comeback routes where now all of a sudden your receiver has to start up again. And usually if a defender's blanket on him, you're not getting any yards after the catch. At least keep your receiver in motion during a lot of these routes. And that's what we saw, right? There was a lot of upfield, a lot of posts or a lot of slant routes that worked out really well. So we're going to get into the Danny talk in a little bit.
Let me share something then until he comes. Because I really, really liking this stat. I'm a shout out Big Blue Unbiased on Twitter. Go follow him at Big Blue Unbiased.
Big Blue.
The New York Giants O-line ranked 9th in pass block win rate after this week. They're ranked near the bottom in run block win rate prior to week one. Where do you think they rank now?
Well, I know week two, it was 15th in the run block and win rate.
Where do you think they total in now?
Week one.
No, total season.
I'm working through it. Relax, all right? Jesus Christ. Calm down, Frank. I'm going to say they're middle. I'm going to guess around 18th.
16th.
Okay.
Pretty damn impressive, man.
I mean, so you didn't even give Tino a chance to guess. Not at all. Let's just, you know, it's just a conversation between you and me.
I'm just so excited to talk about this because we fucking talked about the O-line all year long. All year long.
That was my point.
And we are 0-2, and our O-line is playing highly serviceable. Great? No. Elite? No. But this shit drives me nuts, man. Absolutely fucking nuts.
So that was just run block win rate?
It doesn't have last week's pass block, but they're ranked 9th in pass block.
Last week. What are they in their all pass right. block win rate for the year, though?
What's up, fellas?
The way he said
you can't just fucking come into the show and say, what's up, fellas? We're mid-conversation.
I didn't know. My bad.
And you're 20 minutes late.
My bad.
You didn't even shave for this podcast.
What's That's up, guys? Reverse. Sorry about that. Sorry,
Tina's got the reverse playoff beard going right now. It's like he's not going to shave until
right now I have the Giants are playing like absolute dog shit. I don't feel like shaving until they start winning football games beard going on right now.
Fair
beard.
So depression. Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. All right,
so if anybody doesn't know, welcome the entertainer to the podcast. Fuck you, entertainer, showing up late and then just crashing the podcast. Mid-conversation, mid-thought, it doesn't matter. So
I apologize.
No, you don't. You don't give a shit. Murph, so is there a total on the pass block win rate?
He only did total. It looks like this is for the season. He didn't get
all right. ESPN does that. We should be able to find that. So entertainer's mug is blocked out as he does that. That's awesome. So it must be some sort of pornography on his mug. But we're talking about the Washington game. What were your thoughts? We got a whole thing we're going to go into. Just real quickly, what were your thoughts on the Washington game, Chris?
My thoughts on the Washington game. The offense, I thought, was a pleasant surprise for the most part. I thought the offensive line did about as good of a job as I could have expected them to do in the pass protection department. When you go back and watch the film, Nate Solder actually did a better job than I thought when I was watching the game in real time. I thought Andrew Thomas did a damn good job on Chase Young for the most part. They got some help with chip blocks and things like that. Daniel Jones looked fantastic. When you factor in the defense that he was going up against and the fact that you had the phantom holding call against CJ Board and the fact that, the Darius Slayton drops that ball in the end zone, which you got to at least try to lay out and grab that ball. I thought, and factoring in the defense he was going up against, I thought it was Daniel Jones' best performance as a pro. I really believe that. When you look at some of Jones' old games, when he put up 4 or 5 touchdowns, he was going up against horrible defenses. I think this was really the first time he played at this level going up against an above-average NFL defense. And I think so far this year, Jones looked really good. Those are the positives I take out of the game. The negatives, Patrick Graham doesn't know what the hell he's doing. 2 weeks in, I think he's been completely out game plan. The first game, I thought he blitzed way too much. This game, I thought he didn't blitz enough. It seemed like they never blitzed. They didn't get any pressure. They were playing too far back in zone. And on both sides of the ball, when it mattered most, they weren't aggressive. They played not to lose. Same thing that I said last week one. It was this week as well. On the 2nd and 9, you got to throw that football. You got to put trust in Daniel Jones. He was doing a hell of a job all game. You got to give him the opportunity to win that game. I could even go as far to say that I thought they should have went for it on 4th down and 4th and 2 rather than kicking a field goal. You have to score touchdowns in this league to win. And the defense just, quite frankly, can't give up over 300 yards to Taylor Heinicke. Can't happen.
Yeah, we're going to break down a lot of this stuff as we go along a little bit more. One important question I do have to ask you, Tanner. Do you love your mother?
Yeah.
Would you ever forget your mother's birthday?
No, it is my mother's birthday. Recently it was my mother's
birthday. Oh, look at that. We got two more birthdays.
You can't forget about it, right?
No, it was like 7 or 8. It was 8 days ago. But yeah, it was recently my mother's birthday.
Oh, week apart, Murph.
Today's actually my ex-girlfriend's birthday. So September. September, I know I have a lot of birthdays in September.
Wait, so you used to date Murph's mom then?
Oh man, sorry about that.
We will not be sharing this.
Well, it's getting shared. Tana will share it with her. Don't worry about it.
He's gonna be like, "Who the fuck is Tana?"
So anyway, Murph, to answer my own question, the Giants are 9th overall in team pass block win rate on the season. Oh, and by the way, can you guess who they're ahead of? Oh, that's right. You know who's 10th? Those pesky Kansas City Chiefs, who retooled their entire offensive line, who people in Giants Twitter like to say, oh, well, the Kansas City Chiefs fixed their offensive line in one offseason. Well, guess what? The Giants actually have a better pass block win rate than the team you're boasting about. So not so bad for an offseason. Murphy, you were right. They are 16th overall in one block win rate. Let's see who they're better than here. A lot of decent teams here. Buffalo Bills, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's see, New England Patriots. Well, they're pretty low, but yeah. So overall, the offensive line has improved. But let's get into this, though. Everybody alluded to it in their opening about their thoughts on the game. The defense. Let's start with Tino.
I was going to completely segue out of this, and I was going to piss you off because technically after offensive lineman, there's another guy we haven't mentioned yet, and we're deep into the show. But I'll save it. I won't mention Mr. Quads himself. I'll talk about the defense. That's fine. I think Tana hit it on the head, honestly. I think the way I described it is I think he's just overthinking and doing a little too much. I think people do this in the NFL a lot. I think you get a little too cute sometimes, and I think the defense just was – I mean, like he said, they kind of did nothing in terms of pressure, but they were just kind of doing nothing in general. J.D. McKissick won't score an easier touchdown as a pro than he did in the red zone. That was just gap alignment. That's miscommunication. That's coach to player. It's bad. And I already opened up with this. My opening thoughts of the game were the lowest point of the game was not the missed field goal. It was the 2-play 75-yard drive. I think that summarized in a nutshell. I was disheartened after that. And that's just unacceptable to Taylor Heinicke, man. To a guy like that, to let those throws happen. And that's not to take anything away from the guy. I mean, I thought that was a great throw to Ricky Seals-Jones in the back of the end zone, but it's just, it can't happen. Not in that point of the game. It just can't happen. And, you know, like you guys already summarized, man, the thing we relied on the most is the thing disappointing us the most right now. And going against a team like the Falcons, whose offense is going to bring it more than the other two right now, you know, I wish I had a little more positivity going into it.
All right, Murph, before we get to you, though, I did find something that was real interesting. This was according to PFF. I was looking for some statistics, and I came across this the other day regarding his Patrick Graham's defense in 2020. So pass block, defensive pass efficiency was 11th. Defensive rush efficiency, I can't talk today, was 15th. Bull Bitler is going to have a field day with this one. The 2020 base coverage was a cover three and cover two. So now 2020 third down mentality, sit back and play cover three and cover one. All right. To begin the season for the first 8 weeks, New York ranked 15th in defensive efficiency. For the last half of the game of the season, the last 8 weeks, they were 7th best. At producing a negative EPA allowed per play mark, all right? The Giants' third down defense improved by leaps and bounds in that same split, going from 23rd to 10th in EPA allowed per play. Graham cut down on some blitzing and played a ton less cover one. We haven't really seen it this year so far, right? With the unit's third down rate dropping by 11 percentage points, he opted to sit in zone coverage and let everything play out in front of his defense. This is exactly what we have seen the first 2 weeks of the season. So I believe, especially after reading that and seeing that, I have faith that the Giants are going to get this right, because what Patrick Graham is doing is what worked for this team last year. And Tino said it all last year. Bend, don't break. Bend, don't break. And the Giants gave up a ton of yards last year, but they were the ninth best scoring defense last year. They didn't give up a lot of points. They didn't, even if you got in the red zone, you were coming away with three, not seven. And that's what was good about this defense. He has to adjust. And that's why I don't think we're seeing a lot of blitzes dialed up, because he's sitting in that zone coverage and he wants to let everything play out in front of him. For some reason, it's just not working this year. Or people have seen the film from last year. They're now adapting to it. So therefore, Patrick Graham has to adapt. Dana?
I mean, there's some great points you brought up. You know, I did a video on this like a couple of days ago, actually talking about defense and why I may have overrated them going into the year. And I still think Patrick Graham's a really smart guy. But you look at the quarterbacks we played last year. I mean, I got the list here. I could probably pull it up. But, I mean, we didn't – I mean, we went up against several backups. We only played five good quarterbacks all last year. We played Ben Roethlisberger, who's at best an average quarterback at this point, Mitch Trubisky, Nick Mullins, Jared Goff, Andy Dalton twice, Kyle Allen, Carson Wentz twice, Brandon Allen, and then we played Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Kyle Murray, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. To me, it just looks like Graham maybe doesn't – he's still feeling out his defense. He's still feeling out his new parts with Adoree Jackson, because the first week they look completely different with their defensive philosophy than they did the second week. The first week they blitzed 44% of the time, which was fifth, I think third or fourth in the NFL. This past week they blitzed like 8% of the time. They didn't blitz at all. And I feel like he has to find kind of a happy medium. You have to be somewhat aggressive, but you can't be too aggressive. At least that's my take on it. If you're not getting to the quarterback, you got to play smarter. So he's got a lot of work to do. I think a lot of this does fall on Patrick Graham, though, in terms of the, you know, the inability for the defense to get off the football field. The first game, they were horrible on third down. Another thing I want to bring up is two straight weeks in a row. You think about how crippling this is for this football team. Two straight weeks in a row going into halftime, they gave up a touchdown with seconds to go before the end of the half. It's inexcusable. Cannot happen. Obviously, the 75-play drive on two plays sticks out, but going into halftime, 2 weeks in a row, they gave up a touchdown. Cannot happen.
I also think when you look at the numbers and how they kind of handle the games, I think they might have underestimated the quarterbacks they played. Teddy took some shots. I think they expected him to be a lot more timid. And I think, honestly, the game plan Thursday, obviously you didn't know if Fitzpatrick was exactly going to be there or not up until Tuesday. Short week, I think they were thinking in their head, maybe we'll just let Taylor Heinicke beat us. But honestly, I mean, I don't want to say he just beat him outright, but he pretty much beat him. I mean, if the game plan was don't let Taylor Heinicke beat us, he fed into it. He beat him. He torched him a little bit there. And I think that was kind of their mindset on the short week, and it completely backfired because the dude could ball a little bit better than they expected.
Murph, so let me ask you this question then. So Tana alluded to the 44% blitz rate in game one versus 8% in game two. Do the Giants have the personnel to get to the quarterback? Is this the effect of missing Dalvin Tomlinson?
Damn you, man. You took my damn point.
I didn't make a point. I'm asking the question. That's what a good
Leo, host is.
They don't get these jobs to just anybody, Murph.
Leo is missing Dalvin big time.
Yeah.
He's not getting free. He's getting double teamed. And he's still breaking through that line and getting some pressures here and there. But this isn't the Leo that we saw last year where we could run stunts with and kind of do a lot of different things with on that D-line. Shelton's been shit. Go ahead and say it. He can stop the run, and that's about it. A.J. Johnson, I thought, played really well week one, and he was non-existent this week. But Leo's hurt, man. I really feel like Leo's hurting without Dalvin there. And that's probably kind of like the story of the line right now. I'm sure that means Dexter's hurting too. But you bring up the pass rush and the blitzing, and I think I asked you guys this earlier this week. What's different about this pass rush that versus last year?
There's only one thing, Aziz, I was going to say.
No,
that's
no,
like a lone
bronze. Not at all. Aziz doesn't even count.
I know. Well, he's not getting enough snaps to count.
Aziz is the only good thing right now.
Yeah, I know. But that's the point. That's it.
We didn't have our fucking two starters last year. We manufactured pass rushes with Kyler Fackrell, who had a hell of a fucking game for the Chargers this week, by the way. We manufactured our pass rush with Carter Coughlin, who I've yet to barely see play. I mean, come on. Use your guys. Use your draft picks. Use your speed. Use your versatility. And we manufacture pass rush with guys like Cam Brown. And now we have two edge rushers who are solely edge rushers who can't even touch the quarterback.
So just to pick you off.
What does that say about our edge guys?
It never fails. Never fails. Just to piggyback off of what Murph was saying, the Giants' defense have a team pass rush win rate. They're 22nd in the league, 18th when it comes to team run stop win rate defensively. 22nd in the league, not too bad, right? They're kind of somewhere in that middle of the pack, better than the Chicago Bears, Baltimore Ravens, the Denver Broncos who we faced. But still, Aziz, 2 sacks, 2 games. Outside of him, the pass rush is non-existent, Tano.
Oh, same problem, man. We talked about it last week. Granted, the offense is playing better, the offensive line, but I still feel like the same concerns we had last year is what we're looking at this year. Like, that's the issue I'm having. There isn't many answers. There's just more questions to the questions we had before.
But doesn't it drive y'all nuts that we have our two pass rushers now? Last year we were fucking taking dudes off the street, and we had two guys that literally only rush the pass, and they can't even get there. They can't even touch. Did we touch Heinicke besides Aziz's sack? Did we even fucking touch him?
I don't think so.
We only rush 8% at a time. The pressures weren't there either. I think Baldy posted – now, PFF's numbers were way off because they had us with, like, 20-something pressures. But Baldy, I think, posted – it was, like, 21 versus Denver, only 5 versus Washington or something like that. Those numbers could be off, but you get the idea by how skewed they are, though. So, and I think somebody – I forget where I saw it, but somebody else posted – the fact that we can't get to the quarterback either is our guys don't have any pass rush moves. You know, like a Dwight Freeney or a Robert Mathis that, you know, would use a bull rush and then a spin to create separation. Our guys are just all bull rushers. There's nobody's getting to the quarterback with any moves, anything to that nature. But, Dana, we spent a lot of time in zone defense. We went out and got Adoree Jackson. Where's the man coverage that Adoree Jackson was supposed to bring?
That's what I was super excited about going into this year when we got Adoree Jackson. I thought the other thing I want to say is that, you know, you look at New England. I was watching the New England game on Sunday. They kind of run a similar defense to what we do going up against the Jets. And I know it's, you know, it's a rookie quarterback. But the one thing that they do so much better than us through 2 weeks, they disguise their coverages. Like, you don't know what they're coming with. I feel like the New York Giants, they're not doing as good of a job. They're not as unpredictable on defense as they were last year.
No, let me just stop you there because that's a great point because I thought about that and I'll allow you to continue your thought. Remember the film breakdown from last year where I believe they were in a cover zero and Logan was disguising the coverage and he came up and he picked the quarterback off. I forget what game it was, but it was in the middle of the field. And they just look slow. I think they're trying to disguise the coverages, but they're just not getting to the breaks as fast as they were last year.
Yeah, no, I think that's part of it for sure. And I don't know, man. I think what I'm hoping for as a fan, because if this defense doesn't improve, and I don't, you know, I already accepted they're probably not going to meet my preseason expectations. Like, I thought we were going to be a really, really high-end defense, and maybe we still will, but I'm not going to get my hopes up for that. But if this defense does not improve significantly, this team's not going to win a lot of football games. I don't care how much the offense has improved. And it just feels like, and I do think the offense is going to be vastly improved this year, but it just feels like 2016, 2015 vibes where one side of the ball is good 1 year. And then the next year, the side of the ball that was bad improves, but the side that you were counting on takes a mega step back. And we need to hope and pray as Giants fans that this defense looks much better going forward. And like you guys were saying earlier, it's not going to be easy. I mean, you're going up against now the Falcons, who, if they do have a strength to their football team, it's certainly on the offensive end. You're going to, and the other thing I want to mention, because I was thinking about Kyle Pitts as I was saying that, I also think Graham, specifically in the first game, one, I think we were getting some good pressure the first game. Bridgewater was making some great plays, but you got to make some adjustments. But he left Peppers out on an island in coverage to guard the tight end. They cannot do that this week against Kyle Pitts because he will tear us to shreds. That's been a problem with the tight end against the Giants so far these first couple of weeks. But I'm nervous, man, for this defense. We got the Dallas Cowboys coming up. We got the Falcons. We got the the Rams, we, you know, even the Saints, right, with Winston, he looked good week one. So this defense better get it together. I think the offense is good to go. I think we're going to have at least a league average offense this year. I really believe that. But it's the defense that's really concerning me right now.
Kyle Pitts is going to torch us either way, by the way. Whether Jabril's on him or not, it's just going to be how you attack us.
But Jabril shouldn't be on him, though, man. Like,
we have enough
defense. I'm sick of this Jabril shit on tight ends. It doesn't work.
By the way, the one interception that Logan Ryan had last year was against Washington in a 23-20 win. That's what I thought it was against Haskins, but I wasn't sure. But you bring up a good point, though, about the blitz versus Teddy Bridgewater. They had Teddy running all game.
Yeah.
He just couldn't bring him down for some reason. Teddy Bridgewater looked elusive. He looked rejuvenated. He looked like Michael Vick out there for some reason against our defense. So if you're going to attack Atlanta this week, maybe you do bring the house. You got less mobile quarterback in Matt Ryan, mm-hmm. somebody that doesn't have as good of an arm strength. Maybe you bring the pressure and you kind of force the Matt Ryan turnovers. I know Matt Ryan played a little bit better this week against Dallas, and they almost came back. But I think if you're going to do it, I think that's a get-right game for this defense. I know that they have Calvin Ridley. Let's face it, guys. We have the corners. I'm not worried about this defense yet after week two. But they have the corners to match up with Calvin Ridley. They have nobody else at wide receiver. Russell Gage, who I think got hurt last week as well. I mean, who else are they throwing the ball to? They don't have any other wide receivers. Kyle Pitts is their other wide receiver. So I'm not that worried about it. You can almost disguise – you want to put peppers on them, you can provide safety help over the top. You can do it in a cover two also to provide help for Calvin Ridley. I think this is the game that you go after Matt Ryan.
Can I bring up Saquon yet? Because we've gone almost an hour without mentioning it. And I just want to note that if our offense really wants to hit its ceiling, let me finish the thought. Everyone wants to guess. Yeah, well, we want to gas up the offense. If Saquon, I said this last week, and it got to the touches, so let me specify. If Saquon only has 3 targets and less than 2 receptions again next week, we probably lose again. Get him the ball in space, not between the tackles, for the love of God. I had to yell at Jason all last week for him to run the ball with Danny. Finally did it. Because I know he listens to this show, so this is why I got to do this. This is my platform to do it. Give Saquon Barkley more than 2 receptions so the man could fucking eat. Like, for the love of God. Oh, my God. It's driving me insane. And I got to hear all week long, is Saquon okay? Well, if you look at this one play, he doesn't look fully healthy. He's nursing an ACL injury. He's not going to look fully healthy. But he's fine. Just get him the fucking ball easier. God damn it. I'm sorry. I had to get it off my chest. This the one thing I'm question I've heard all week.
You did bring up Saquon, which we were going to talk about later on in the show, but
I had to get it out.
The one thing on Saquon is, I mean, we've said it here before, right? I mean, what was always the target date for Saquon? Even if he wasn't fully healthy, what did we say here on the show? Week 3, right?
That was mine as well.
Yeah.
I mean, week 3 was always the target date for a full workload for Saquon. I mean, they got to be able to disguise or not disguise, but draw up different plays for Saquon. I agree with you, Tino. We talked about it last week. I mean, utilizing Saquon, and Murph brought up the point about Jason Garrett trying to use him like Zeke. He's not that. You got to get him outside the tackles. And some of that is Saquon's own fault. I mean, we saw it week one, right? He had a wide open lane outside with one defender in space versus Denver, and he cut it back inside where literally everybody was waiting for him.
That's fair, but for me, it's that if you look at our offensive success against Washington, a majority of it comes in the read option, and it's mainly because Washington didn't respect Danny at all. Why, I don't know, but there was no one there whenever he ran the ball. Literally no one. The DN did not stay home one time. These are professional defensive ends. That is very common sense. If they respected Danny at all, that means their assignment was to crash on Saquon every single time. We ran a double screen, faking to Saquon, and we threw to Shep. They did a good job utilizing Saquon as a decoy, which is great, which is a big usage for him. But now you can not only use him as a decoy and make them think a little bit, But then you can start using things, run the double screen the other way to Saquon, get certain things going, get jet motion going the opposite way and throw the ball back to Saquon. My point is, everyone's patting Jason on the back because he's getting a little creative, and that's fine. But it didn't start to get creative for guys who need to get the ball. We need to start finding ways to get Saquon the ball in better situations than we're doing right now if we really want to hit our peak. I know we're happy we scored 29 points, but I'm telling you, it could have been
second most of Garrett's tenure.
I'm supposed to be happy. I'm just looking at this on how we can get better. Like, hey, Danny's best game, and Saquon did nothing. He had one big run, and he did nothing.
Do you know what would help get Saquon open on those routes that you're talking about?
Talk to me.
Lining up Kadarius Toney opposite side of him.
Would help.
Why is Kadarius Toney not fucking playing? I'm sick of this. The coach, his wide receiver coach, Tyke Tolbert, came out and said he knows the playbook. So why is he not spending more time on the field? But I'm going to give everybody a chance if anybody wants to talk about the Saquon piece. So, go ahead with Saquon.
Well, to go off what you said real quick, not to fully hijack, but we said this last week. What's the only way Tony's probably going to get more snaps, though, if Slayton works himself out of the offense? This was a very key point to that. We uttered these words. And I'm not saying he's going to be gone this week, but I'm saying expect the snaps to probably tick up. You're only going to give him so many opportunities. I know he made a nice little play there. He scored a touchdown for us, but that was an excellent throw by Danny. The only way I think Tony's going to get more receptions or more targets earlier in the season is Slayton just works himself out of this offense. And if he continues this shit up, he's definitely going to do it. You're muted again, Mage. Damn it, that's twice this show.
I hate to burst your bubble, Tino, but, I mean, we went through and we looked at the stats all offseason. This team fucking loves Darius Slayton, right or wrong. They're going to continue to play him, but I agree with you. Darius Slayton right now, with the way that Sterling Shepard's playing, is probably the roadblock to Kadarius Toney, although I don't think he needs to be. Kadarius Toney, like Murph likes to say, is an athlete one. He's not a wide receiver one. He's not a wide receiver two. Get him on the field and find ways to get him involved.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But, Murph, what's your thoughts on everything?
Well, with Saquon, I mean, you got to go from snap one RPO, man. I mean, that's working for us right now. Because eventually they're going to respect Danny and stop respecting Saquon. And if they're going to disrespect or respect both of them, pull the fucking ball and throw it to the slant. You know, because there's multiple things you can do with the RPO. So Saquon, man, there's a lot of things I want to say about it, but I'm going to save it because I'm not ready to make those statements yet. But
all right. So
he's an extra piece right now, man. He's just an extra piece right now. And that's all, right, all so he is.
Let me ask. Go ahead.
No, you're good.
Let me ask Tana's question then, Tana, right? Tino had alluded to Saquon. We're talking about Saquon's ability in this game. The leading rusher for the New York Giants right now is Daniel Jones.
Yep.
And I heard a great point today, but Daniel Jones is part of the New York Giants run game.
Yeah.
He has to be. So my question to you is, I mean, how relevant is the run game around Daniel Jones? Is it more important than Saquon?
You know, I don't want to say that we should go full Lamar Jackson because Daniel Jones is a better thrower of the football than him, and I think he's definitely a more equipped pocket passer than Lamar Jackson is. But I do think the New York Giants need to make this a more regular thing. You know, the first game, I was pissed off that they didn't try to utilize Daniel Jones's legs. I knew they were going up against a great secondary in the Denver Broncos, and I thought that was probably going to be their best way to create big plays with Daniel Jones's legs, especially with Evan Engram out of the game, where I thought they were going to attack the middle of the field against Denver with their great exterior corners. I want to add that as well. Like, you think about this RPO, defenses are going to have to start to respect Daniel Jones. This guy just ran for what should have been over 100 yards. And if they have to continue to focus on his ground game, like you guys kind of said, that should open up big play opportunities for Saquon. And if they key in on both of them, getting Evan Engram back over the middle of the field, it should create big, if he can hold on to the football, it should create big play opportunities off the fake. So I'm excited about this offense. Saquon Barkley, yeah, I'm not sold yet. He does not look like the same player so far through 2 weeks. I don't like the way that Garrett has utilized him so far. I was hoping for more of an Alvin Kamara type role. I think Saquon's going to be all right. I think you're going to start to see, I don't think it'll be full Saquon this week, but I think you're going to start to see a little bit more of what we've come to expect from Saquon Barkley this week. I didn't expect much the first 2 weeks because there was only a 3-day layover. As a matter of fact, I was surprised he's got as many touches as he did. But with 10 days off, I expect this offense to be prepared And I think Saquon will look a lot better. But and with Tony, man, they got to involve him, you know, and maybe you could use the playbook as an excuse the first couple of games because he barely played in training camp, didn't have much of a rapport with Daniel Jones, COVID, the ankle injury. He was a mess throughout all of training camp. So I never really expect him to have that big of a role the first 2 weeks. I expected more than this. I expect him to be returning some punts, returning some kicks, maybe used in Wildcat, get a little creative with this guy. And the first game, you used him on the first two drives. We haven't seen him since. They got to get more creative because there's really no players on this team outside of Barkley and Tony that could create a big play out of a three-yard catch. There's really no other players other than those two. Those are our big play threats in terms of guys that can make something out of nothing outside of Daniel Jones's legs. So they got to utilize those guys more in the offense.
Maze, you say this a lot because I want to tie it to Golly too. But right now, him and Saquon are just literally the round pegs and square holes. That's what it feels like. That's what I'm saying. I know people's got their gripes with Saquon. He doesn't look healthy, whatever it may be. That's fine. But there's no denying they're not utilizing him the proper way. And Golly seemed that way. I think last game was a lot better, but still, obviously, certain things aren't there. Everything feels very forced. This offense, as good as it looked, is not fluid. They don't know what to do with Tony yet. That's why I'm like, I have so much hope kind of like deep down about this offense if they could just fucking get their heads out of their asses, because I believe the defense will come around and we haven't even scratched the surface of this offense. Like you said, second most, right? Second most since Garrett was here. And we didn't utilize any of the three top guys we have.
Hardly at all. Darius Slayton catches that pass, Tino. It's the most points Washington's given up since 2019. Their high total last year was 34. But I'm with you, man. I don't think the offense is clicking on all cylinders yet, but I expected that.
Yeah.
Going into the year, I thought the first 2 weeks the offense was going to look sluggish because of all the variables. Barkley coming back, Golladay having no rapport with Jones, Tony. I expected that. I expected the offense to come out somewhat sluggish. So I actually think they're a little bit ahead of schedule. The defense is what needed to carry us going into the year. When we saw our schedule first 2 weeks, I said to myself, we got to be able to run the ball and we got to be able to play defense. We got to create some turnovers. Otherwise we're going to start 0-2. And that's what's happened. As good as the offense looked, and I agree, it's not a finished product yet. Week two, defense didn't show up. And if the defense doesn't show up, we're not winning. I don't care how good the offense looks this year. We're not going to win a lot of football games.
I think Baldy did a breakdown today, and I think he went through all the kind of alluded to the fact that Daniel Jones doesn't exactly trust Kenny Golladay yet. And he showed a couple plays where you could see where Kenny Golladay should have been the target and said he throws into traffic to Sterling Shepard because he trusts Sterling. And look, Sterling Shepard had 10 targets and 9 receptions. That's a 90% catch rate. So, I mean, there's a reason why he trusts him, but Daniel Jones has to work into that with Kenny Golladay. Now, Kenny Golladay did have 8 targets, only 3 receptions, though. And we know he doesn't have a great catch rate, but especially my biggest problem, which we haven't really talked about yet. We talked about the 2-play 75 drive that the defense gave up, but the Giants 3-minute offense, 4-minute offense, was horrendous at the end of the game, right? You're playing, and for the most part, a lot of people talked about, no, you got to be more aggressive. You got to be more aggressive. And I disagree with that. I like the play calling all the way up to that 2-minute mark, right? Because the Giants would kept it a 1-score game. Washington could never tie it up with a field goal. They had to score a touchdown. And that's why I was okay with the short game there, right? Kick the field goal. We're driving the ball. It never felt like at any point during that Washington game, we couldn't take the ball down the field.
Wait, are you talking about the field goal after the Bradbury interception or before the Bradbury interception?
Well, I'm getting to that. I'm talking about beforehand, right?
Oh, okay. Like, I just want to make sure I know what play
The first 3 quarters of the game, people want to see more aggressiveness out of this offense. And I was completely okay with playing for the field goal because we were moving the ball. Right. And for the most of the game, we were always up by 6 points at some point. But then you give up to 2-play 75-yard drive. Now you're down by 1. Mm-hmm. Now that's the issue. Now you're down 26-27. You take the ball down, or we get the interception on the Bradbury turnover. You got to be more aggressive there.
Yeah.
That was my problem. Biggest problem with the play calling. I had no problem with anything else. You got to get the first down there. Worst case scenario, You get the first down. You see them on the other side of a two-minute warning, and Washington has no timeouts left. You could run it down to about a minute. Yeah. But then they have to be very methodical going down the field the opposite way to get it just to get into field goal range. And who knows what might have happened there.
See, but my issue is the opposite drive. See, that's why, and I'm glad Tanner brought it up, because I actually don't – whatever. You call it timid, you try to run out the clock. We get under 5 minutes. I remember distinctly because we had two false starts, which is just pathetic. We literally ridiculous, 3rd and 5. And that definitely added to them being timid. But we're already up 3. You kick a field goal to go up 6. It doesn't really add up to me. Like, I'd rather go for it. I know it's 4th and 4, but, like, it bothered me that we kind of settled because then they had the two-play 75-yard drive.
I disagree with you, though, because, again, you're up by 6. The pressure is on Washington to score a touchdown. They cannot tie it with a field goal. And you're getting the ball back. So I was okay with the play call before the two-minute warning because, again, the pressure's on Washington. So now Washington – now, ideally, look, the part that we're forgetting about in terms of this philosophy, Dino, is it only took them 2 plays to drive 75 yards.
You're right. You're right.
Now, in theory, right – let's say it was a 12-play drive, 75 yards. Now they're only up 1 with the ball in our hands with under 2 minutes. All we got to do is kick a field goal to win. That's why you play for the field goal there.
That's true, but my issue is, if you think about it, a 55-yard field goal is not a gimme.
That was my – I'm
that's with the
you.
Thing.
That was my line of thinking in the game.
In hindsight, it works out, but, like, in just – like. Because best case scenario is then you don't settle for a 55-yarder, which by the judging of us having Santoso, the Giants don't ultimately trust Gano kicking, you convert that, you bring the clock to 4 minutes before you probably snap the other one. Then you could probably bring it down to the 2 minute by the time if you settle for an easier field goal. And then pressure's really on Washington to have to put together a 2 minute drive with a backup quarterback. Yeah, so like, that's why I'd rather do
that. But then what happens in that situation, 4th and 4, you turn over the ball. Now all Washington needs to do is just kick a field goal to win, and then the pressure's on you going the other way to score a touchdown.
No, see, but field goal to tie, they have to score the touchdown, and you have all your timeouts in 5 minutes.
All right. So if they did score the touchdown, the score is now 23-27. You're down by 4.
Yeah.
Now you need a touchdown. You can't win with a field goal. That's why I like the way Joe Judge played most of the game because it was very chess-like. It was like, okay, if I do this now, how can I do this later? So, and that was my biggest problem with the two-minute warning is you had to get the first down there. I don't care if you walked away with a field goal afterwards, but you got to kill the clock.
Yeah.
They gave Washington the ball back with 2 timeouts, I believe, left on the clock. With what was it? Just about 2 minutes, I think. They hadn't hit the two-minute warning yet. You can't do that. You got to get the field goal. But back to what Tatum was saying about the play calling, run, pass. And what was it? The one Saquon Barkley run, they run inside. And this is what I don't like. You got the entire defense up in the box. You got a stacked box with a single safety playing about 10 yards off the ball. You got Kenny Golladay, your $17 million wide receiver with man coverage on the outside. You fake the ball to Saquon Barkley, freezes the single high safety, and you pay your $17 million wide receiver to go make a contested catch.
Take a shot.
It's 1-on-1. And if it doesn't work out, it's still 3rd down. So fucking what?
Or you run the fucking ball with Danny, like we did all night. RPO walks right in.
Yeah, but that's why they had the single high, though. I get it. Hey, somebody else had mentioned that about running an RPO with Danny. But in that situation where stacked box, the line is blocking in. So
an RPO doesn't have to be a run, though.
Yeah, run pass.
Oh, well, yeah, but no, I get it, but.
I would have thrown.
It was just bad play calling. I mean,
I would have thrown it.
Dude,
Saquon got 3 touches on the last 2 drives that were meaningless touches.
Yeah, they knew it was
3 carries, all 1 yard. But I told you the 1 yard carry. That's the same exact thing they did with him when we got to the red zone against Denver, dude. Single back stretch, whatever the hell you want to call it, it don't work. That's why if you're gonna give him those touches, there's got to be a different way. I don't care about the clock of that situation. What is the point? giving Saquon a 1 yard fucking touch to run into a tackle. Like it,
because oh my Garrett's God. Offense.
Saquon could break a run.
It's counterproductive. It's so counterproductive.
Saquon could break a run, but you try it on first down.
If first down, you got to run. First down, you got to run.
If it doesn't work, then that's fine.
Yeah.
But then they did it on second is also the issue. Yeah.
That's the issue, right, is that you run on second. And then the third down, you didn't even – I mean, you didn't even pass the six.
But that one
was – it was an incomplete pass, but you don't even give your wide receiver the opportunity to get a first down.
That one, I think, on Danny, though. See, that's why I was telling you. I think that was
behind him, the receiver, too, on that throw.
Yeah, that one's on Danny. Like, he that's what I'm starting to see more, because I'm trying to, like, take the lenses off and be, like, more critical on Danny than I've been. And I think this is a hard game to do it. But to say he didn't miss some throws is.
He missed a couple. Yeah. He had that ball that was nearly intercepted where he didn't see the linebacker. But overall, I thought Jones had a really good
ball. For sure.
Yeah. But I am in complete agreement with you. And another point in the game I'm thinking about while I'm watching this, and I have to go back to the play-by-play in terms of on ESPN to see what the situation was. There was a point earlier in the game where it was tied up at 7 apiece, and the Giants had the ball in the Washington 5, 4th and 2, and they elected to kick a field goal. And
I like that.
You like the field goal. Here's my line of thinking. I get getting the 3 there because you figure your defense is going to play better in the game with Taylor Heineke at quarterback, so it's hard to play Monday morning quarterback. But you could at least argue that maybe they should have shown a little bit more aggression there. But I can't really argue the field goals. The 55-yarder, when it was live, I was like Tino was kind of saying, that's like a 50-50 whether or not it's going to go in. So I wanted them to go for it there, but I couldn't kill them because, to Mays's point, it made it so that they had to score a touchdown to take the lead. You didn't think they were going to go down the field on 2 plays.
Was that the Danny run drive that got called back?
The Danny run drive.
That was the drive that Tino was talking about, the 2 holding calls back to back.
Yeah. Well, no, the 2 holding calls is when we missed Slayton with the touchdown.
Oh, 2 false starts.
Yeah, that is when
we missed Slayton with the touchdown pass. But you got to throw on 2nd and 9 there, man. It opens up the entire playbook. Give it 5-6 yards. You know, 5-6 yards. It opens up the entire playbook. You could elect to run on 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3. You could elect to pass. When you only run for 2 yards, the defense knows what's coming. They play back there. They guard against the sticks. It was too predictable, and there was way too much time left to do that. You saw that Washington was moving the ball at will. They just went 75 yards on 2 plays. You couldn't rely on that defense to close out the game. And, you know, as good as the offense looked or as improved as the offense looked, going forward, and I don't know if this is more on Joe Judge or Jason Garrett, I would guess Judge. Going forward, I need to see them come out with a much more aggressive game plan offensively in big spots. Don't play it safe. I want my quarterback to decide. This is what this year is all about, finding out whether or not Daniel Jones could be that leader going forward. I want Daniel Jones in those situations to have the opportunity to decide if we win or lose the football games. I don't want to rely on the defense. And the first 2 games has proven that we can't do that anyway. And in today's NFL, it's very hard for a defense to close out a football game. You have to give Daniel Jones the opportunity to win it.
Especially when he's your best runner. Like, that's the other thing. Like, I would rather Danny, whether if it's a set pass or not, you can go empty. Who gives a shit? Force him to go a man. Danny's your best playmaker and runner on offense right now. As wild as that is, it's just the truth. Why wouldn't you want the ball in his hands? Why would you give it to a hobbled Saquon who has nothing other than 1 big run on the day twice? It doesn't add up to me. That's what I'm saying. Like, and he did it on the drive before. Like, they followed the game plan of making Danny run up until the end of the game. And then I think they started to panic and not to trust Danny again. They didn't want Danny to actually have the ball in his hands. That was a game you needed Danny to have the ball in his hands. And you're right. I think it sucked. He showed it with his arm. But, like, they made him use his arm more than his legs at the end of the game. And I think if we just let him use his fucking legs, man, the clock would have ran. It's the best of both worlds.
And all you got to do is look at Week 1. And this is what pissed me off. Denver, they're kind of built like us, or at least we thought we were built like them going into the year. Defense first. That's the stronger unit. What did they do with Teddy Bridgewater? They allowed him to go for 4th and 7 at midfield. They went for it on the 4th and 2, kind of like what I was just saying when it was near the end zone. The 4th and 1, rather, where he had the stiff arm on McKinney and he was able to convert for the touchdown. They gave their quarterback, even though they know the strength of their team is their defense, the opportunity to decide whether or not they won or lost that football game. The Giants have to allow Daniel Jones to do the same thing this year.
Yeah, but to be fair, Tana, though, 4th down attempts versus the Giants this year, opponents are 5 for 5.
It's because of Bridgewater, man.
So, I mean, on it, the Giants couldn't stop anybody on fourth down that game. But, I mean, you know, and I'm thinking back on that, too. So, Tino, you're talking about wanting possibly Danny in a two-minute situation, but the Giants were in bunch formation as well. I mean, you're not fooling anybody in a bunch formation with everybody on the line, or, you know, a single wide receiver out wide. You got to line up in passing formation if you plan to use the RPO, like Murphy even talked about, too, right? I mean, you got to give some sort of illusion that there's a threat to pass. There was no threat to pass, which would have been a perfect opportunity because they did stack the box with a single high to take the shot with Kenny Galladay out wide. But let's move on from that one play, though. So, question I'm going to present to everybody, and let's start with Murph on this one, is Danny the franchise quarterback that we thought we were getting? We saw him. He actually audible out of the play call on that shot deep to Slayton that was dropped. But we saw a lot of really good things out of Danny. I mean, Murph, is Danny the franchise quarterback we thought we were getting?
I mean, everybody that listens to this show already knows what my thoughts are on that. I mean, again, one of the only bright spots on this team this year. So why can't he be? He's not turning the ball over left and right like he used to be. He's had a good start to the year, at least through the air. Obviously, he had the one fumble, but, I mean, why can't he be? My worry is his team now lets him down when we know that he can be it. But, again, like, even game one, man, Danny didn't play great, but he didn't play bad.
Yeah.
So, there's no reason for me to even be wanting to look at quarterbacks right now, like, even talking about quarterbacks next year, because – far from our biggest issue. I don't even know that he's top five right now.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, as crazy as it seems, he's barely top 10 on our fucking list of bad things going wrong this year. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, all we talked about was edge rush, Danny, and the O-line. And two of the three have been very serviceable and played well enough to win games, and their team let them down. So as of right now, today, yeah, Danny's our franchise quarterback. And if you can get those legs running like they did last week, we might have a whole new player, because as successful as he was his rookie year, we didn't use his legs. He used his legs when he needed to, but the New York Giants did not use Danny's legs. So why can't he be? Again, like, he gets so much hate for those fumbles, and solely those fumbles, that they don't even study the player anymore. It's just Daniel Jones, turnover king.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, even my Redskins buddies were eating crow. Like, they know damn well Daniel took it to them all game long on Thursday. So if Danny continues to play at that level, absolutely he's our franchise quarterback. Other things may make him not our franchise quarterback. But that's out of his control at this point.
This is just a little side note, since we're all in a fantasy group together, but Danny is the sixth highest scoring quarterback so far this year in fantasy football.
Yours truly started him with Sterling Shepard in our league, and nice. Frank the Tank, sorry for your massive loss.
That sucks. So I have a good way to answer that question, Maze.
I got a special question I'm going to add to you, though, Tino. So okay. Give us your thoughts on Danny. But I want to know, is Jason Garrett also forgiven?
No, Jason Garrett's never forgiven. But that's it. Let me finish my Danny thought first. Because I'm sorry. Everyone's saying that Jason Garrett, the most creative he's looked is on a pre-scripted play call of the first drive of the game. It's like, go home. Please go home. Tell me what he's calling when it matters. And the last thing I checked, that's what we just spent a half hour talking about, and it wasn't very good. So. Besides the point, I'm not giving him cookies for running with our mobile quarterback. I think, though, to your point, is he the franchise quarterback we thought we were getting? He's not. He's not, because he's doing everything I did not anticipate. I was sold on he's going to be Eli Manning, and this is not fucking Eli Manning. It's actually the opposite of Eli Manning. I did not think when we were getting Danny, when I thought we were getting a franchise quarterback for the Giants, like, and that's why I'm worried we're going to break him, because I don't even know if the Giants knew they were getting this or knew this would be the most successful way to use him, but it's the fact of the matter. You got to use Danny's legs, and it's something I don't think we were prepared for, but I'm okay with it. Like, I always wanted the Giants to kind of have a mobile guy. I mean, that's why everyone wants all the skills guys out there, the Russell Wilson, the Deshaun Watson, all those guys use their legs to make plays. Danny can do that. I wish he did it a little more instinctively, but if we got to set up design runs and run it kind of how Lamar does it in Baltimore, I'm completely okay with it. And not for nothing, people shit on Lamar for fumbles, but not as much as Danny. Like, keep that same energy. I know Lamar's got an MVP, but, like, to Merv's point, I was just making a note of this. A lot of the mantras of last year for a lot of teams, not just the Giants and Danny, have carried over. And but, like, for Danny, it's carried over from rookie year still. Last year, he didn't have that many turnovers, man. I know it's the easy number to pick on, but, like, if you're not actually watching the game, like, for the same people who are going to say the offensive line is the biggest issue going into this, or, like, those are going to be the talking points, haven't watched the last two games. Like, these are different teams. And, like, it's still early in the year. That's why people are saying it, because teams are still finding their identities. So it's like, you know, I think Danny gets picked on and gets a bad rap. Like Merv said, are there ways for him not to be a franchise quarterback? Yeah, but I don't think it's going to be Danny's fault. And we've talked about that on this show. If things go bad, it's not on Danny. Like, I just think they're finding the way to utilize him. They just need to actually do it now. They got to play to their players, like, to their strength. It just has to happen, man. They got to get Danny going with his legs.
What about you, Tanner?
Yeah, I mean, unlike maybe you guys, I was not completely sold on Daniel Jones early on in his career. I was not. I obviously didn't love the pick.
The reaction is out there to the pick, so.
I was not in love with the pick when we made it. Last year, even though the stats didn't really show it, I actually thought he was progressing as a quarterback. I thought he was getting better with the pre-snap reads. And to Tino's point, I actually posted this on Twitter the other day, and he's absolutely right. The whole turnover stigma with Daniel Jones is so misguided. You know, you look at Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning threw 28 picks in his rookie year, but nobody talked about it because he overcame it. Daniel Jones had 37 turnovers in his first 21 starts. He's only had 4 turnovers in his last 8. You'd be hard-pressed to find a quarterback that has that few turnovers over their last 8 games. And that is a large sample size based on his career span. That's about a third of his career. He's only turned the ball over 4 times, a half a turnover a game on average, and they're not all his fault. One was an interception off of both of Evan Ingram's hands. I think another was a handoff to Gallman. One was a blindside hit that he really couldn't do anything with. So Daniel Jones has gotten much better in the turnover department. And in terms of whether or not he's a franchise quarterback, yes, I think he has the possibility to be a franchise quarterback. My question is, could he be a franchise quarterback with the Giants? And I don't have that answer yet because the Giants have not equipped him properly. You know, I look at Sam Darnold. You know, I never hated Sam Darnold. I don't think he's incredible, but I always thought Sam Darnold, if he was put in a better situation, could be a pretty good quarterback. You see what he's doing with the Carolina Panthers now. He got out of the Jets mess. Well, so far, the New York Giants have not set Daniel Jones up properly. Yes, the offensive line is starting to play somewhat better. Garrett's scheme is not ideal. You know, Shermer's scheme is why we drafted him. He fit the Pat Shermer scheme. He doesn't fit Garrett's scheme as well, so he's not in an ideal situation. But in terms of his skill set and his talent, if people don't admit that Daniel Jones has at least top 10 potential in the NFL, they're not watching the games. I mean, he's got the arm. He's got the legs. And I think he's developing in terms of being able to read the football field. I like Daniel Jones as a quarterback, and I don't even think he's a problem. Like Murph said, he's not in our top 5 problems. I don't even view him as a problem right now. I'm not saying I'm completely sold on him in terms of being an incredible quarterback, but I look around this team. Offensive line's a bigger problem, even though it's been okay the first 2 weeks. It's definitely a bigger problem. Saquon Barkley, we still don't know if he's ever going to be old Saquon, vintage Saquon. Our weapons, we don't really use them properly so far. The defense is a complete mess. You can make an argument going into the year. The 3 things that I was most sure about were Joe Judge, Patrick Graham, and the defense. None of them have met my expectations. The 2 things that I was least sure about, the offensive line and Daniel Jones, they've exceeded expectations.
Is Patrick, Jason Garrett forgiven in your eyes?
I don't like Jason Garrett. But I don't feel like I hate him as much as everybody else. Like, I don't put all the blame on Jason Garrett. I don't think he's a great offensive player.
What does he need to be forgiven for? I think that was the, like, so what am I forgiving him for? What, that's what I'm at. Like,
for you, here's the thing, man. This is just my personal opinion about Garrett. Garrett's not good. But I do think Garrett was put in a really tough situation. I think it was a bad hire by the Giants because our personnel didn't fit what he brought to the table. You look at Jason Garrett's offensive scheme, Air Coryell. He wants to throw deep balls down the outside. In order to do that, you need to have a strong offensive line. So the New York Giants should have realized that when they before they hired him, that this is not a very good match. He doesn't fit with Daniel Jones. So it's very hard for me to get on Garrett. To me, that's more the hiring process by the New York Giants. And I put that more on Mara because I do think if Garrett had the proper pieces in place, he's proven he could run an adequate offense. I just don't think he has the necessary pieces here to run his scheme. Now, of course, you have to adjust to the players on your team. I'm not giving him a full cop-out. He has to be more innovative, and hopefully the New York Giants are going to bring that to the table this year. But, no, I mean, I don't think he's good. I don't want him to be the offensive coordinator in 2022. But sometimes I feel like Giants fans put all the blame on him when it's probably should not necessarily be the case.
All right, one more quick question. We'll go around before we end it with thoughts on Atlanta. But, Murph, the offensive line, we lost Nick Gates last week. We opened up the show with this leg. I mean, what do you think about this offensive line going forward? Who is the starting five?
I'm going to say something that a lot of people aren't going to like. Well, before I say it's typical. Shane Lemieux, it sucks because he did look better. He looked better. He looked like he had improved a little bit. But I'm not losing sleep over it. I'm really not, because the drop-off from him to the other guys, in my opinion, isn't far. And I'm going to say this, and it's not because I don't like the guy, because I do like the guy. But it's the same thing with Gates, man. I just don't see as big of a drop-off from the Gates to the rest of the crew. They weren't very good last year. I know Gates, we all think Gates was a better guard. But I'm not losing sleep over it, man. It's next man up mentality. That O-line didn't prove shit. Absolutely nothing. Yes, Gates was a captain. Yes, he was an enforcer. Yes, he would fucking go to war with anyone that touched Danny. Yes, you know, he's mean and nasty. We loved his mean streak. But to me, it's really not that big of a loss, man. Really not. So going forward, I don't know, man. Like, part of me is like, yeah, I appreciate that they're trying and they're getting guys reps at different positions, but I'm kind of sick of this O-line rotation as well. You know, it was cool because we were trying to figure out our identity. We're trying to figure out who we are, what we're going to be going forward, but we still don't have that fucking identity. So I'm almost to the point where it's just like, just play your five guys and leave the fuck alone. But on the flip side of that, can we even do that? I mean, with the bodies we have, can we even really do that? Like, we have three tackles. I'm not even counting Corey Cunningham. And we have, what, three guards? So this is kind of where we're at. So a rotating line is probably not going away. It's probably not going away. You know, Bredesen comes in there and gives up a sack first thing on Sunday. He's probably coming out. They're probably going to shuffle around. I saw that, and it's not official, but on the Giants website, Skura is listed as a guard, second team guard now. So that's interesting. I still think Price's job is to lose. I think they traded for that man knowing they could start him. Price is the center, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm not sweating the O-line until it gets completely dominated by, quote unquote, the best defense in the NFL and the best front seven last week that they didn't necessarily get dominated by. I'm not sweating it. I'm really not. We got the Falcons and Saints coming up. I'm not worried about the O-line, man. I'm worried about replicating that offensive game plan, and I'm worried about this damn defense playing so much soft zone.
So two moves today, too. The Raiders signed Jackson Barton off of the Giants practice squad. And the Giants also signed offensive lineman Cole Benoit. So,
zero starts for him.
Yeah. Tana, what are your thoughts on the offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this week we heard that they might be trying paired at the guard. We'll see if he gets an opportunity to play that. I know he played it in college. But yeah, to Murph's point, man, I shouldn't say I hated it.
That's been corrected. So Murph got caught out there with his pants down with that guy, Murph.
Apparently UConn fucked their website up and put he was a guard and he never played guard. So that's on me.
No, I actually read an article. I don't even think it was off the UConn website where it said he played guard until his senior season.
See, there's a lot going on out there.
Somebody tagged Talking Giants today and something as well and said that he looked at Pertz tape, and he played either left tackle or right tackle, never started at guard.
Okay. Then the website, then the sources out there are wrong then, because it did say that he had played guard before.
Yeah, I mean, the website says they started 14 games of guard.
So. Look, I'm not sitting here and watching college tape of a UConn.
Yeah, neither am I.
You know, tackle. So, I mean, let it be known or not, but there is disputing information out there that he started at guard, though.
All right. Well, bottom line is,
look, we want you to screw up on the show that nobody listens to, so you don't screw up on your YouTube channel.
I already made a video on it, so I already screwed up in my video. I took the quote, but no. The bottom line is, as far as Parrott goes and the offensive line goes, is yeah, I'm sick of the rotation. I'm sick of the musical chairs. Like last year, I understood it more last year because you had young offensive linemen, you were trying to get them roles. But at this point, kind of like Murph said, what choice do we have? I mean, we're dealing with the back end of the roster right now in the offensive line. And so far, they've gotten the job done. I don't think Nick Gates is that big of a loss. You know, I frequently point out guys, and I love Nick Gates, one of my favorite players on the team. But I frequently point out guys on the New York Giants roster that I think the fans massively overrate. I think he's one of them. He's one of my favorite players. I think he brings that energy. I think he's the leader of the offensive line. But we're not talking about – he's an okay offensive lineman. I don't think he's this gigantic loss. Maybe in terms of leadership, he's a captain. But in terms of his play on the football, like Ryan Connolly to me was another one of those guys. I thought Giants fans massively overrated him. I'll even say Carter Coughlin to an extent. I think Giant fans overrate him a little bit. But I don't think that we can't overcome that. I don't think we're going to have a great offensive line. But if we could even have a satisfactory offensive line, I think going into the year, we all would have been very happy with that. Thomas has gotten the job done so far. His PFF grade may not show it, but his pass blocking hasn't given up a sack. He's gone up against some great edge rushers. And even Solder last game, when I watched the tape back, Nate Solder was playing pretty good. I mean, for a guy, you know, a guy that's old and broken down, I thought Nate Solder looked pretty good on the right side. So hopefully they can continue to piece it together. I think they'll be okay against Atlanta. Atlanta's defense obviously doesn't scare me. You got to come with a better offensive game plan. But so far, I'm not going to get on the offensive line until they give me a reason to do so. Am I going to go into every game being like, yeah, oh, that's a given? No. But am I as frantic as I was going into the year? Not necessarily. And one guy that I think needs a ton of credit that nobody's talking about is Rob Sale. Everybody's harping on the bad job that the other coaches are doing, whether it's Patrick Graham, whether it's Joe Judge. Rob Sale, with a makeshift offensive line, and it was a makeshift before the injuries, has this offensive line playing at least close to average. He deserves a ton of credit so far for the performance of this offensive line.
Well, is there any coincidence that the offensive line suddenly looks good and Pat Flaherty's back?
Flaherty as well. Yeah, he's part of it as well, for sure.
Do you know?
Whether the reports are disputed or not, who gives a shit, because Matt Pert's getting reps at guard. And you know what? That's another thing that we also have to pat ourselves on the back for, because obviously, you know, we have to wait and see for us to be right on Pert. And it took several injuries for us to be right on Pert, but it's finally happening. The one game, boys, the one game, we finally got what we wanted. We said, for what, a year and a half, move Gates to guard. We move him to guard, and the poor poor guy, man. That, like, again, like, I didn't think
this was a bad luck charm. That's what it was.
Seriously, no, but like, to your points, like, is it a big fall off? No, it sucks from a leadership standpoint. I think it more is disappointing because we were gonna get to see what we were thinking this offensive line could be better at, yeah. Like, you know, with him at guard, and you know, we won't get to see it, but. Dude, I mean, with that said, I love the shout out to Rob Sale, because that's actually something I had not thought about. And you're right, because last year that was a storyline every week. Giants offensive line coaching. I mean, it was Guglielmo,
Mark Colombo. Yeah.
Oh my God, it was a bigger circle. Yeah. By this time, Mark Colombo. Oh my God, was in the headlines. I mean, that was a bigger merry-go-round than the offensive line itself. I want to see what happens with Pert. Solder was better than I thought. And yeah, you know what? Fuck a PFF grade. I love how quiet people are on Andrew Thomas. That's just what being a Giant fan is in a nutshell. Once you start doing things right, you just all of a sudden don't hear about it.
Literally.
I haven't heard one thing about Andrew Thomas. No news is good news, but it's like sometimes you want to give a man his flowers, you know?
It's a thankless job, man, being an offensive lineman, because when you say their name, it's bad. You're never going to say an offensive lineman's name because he does a great job.
That's true.
Yeah, so, but.
All right, so real quick, I want everybody, I'm going to give you two stats. I want you to give me one key to the game versus Atlanta. Before I do, though, I just want to state two things. Atlanta, 30th scoring offense in the NFL, 32nd ranked scoring defense in the NFL. They give up the most points defensively and almost score nearly the least. This, I mean, this is a perfect game for Eli Manning's retirement party, isn't it? Give me one key to the game. What do you guys want to see the Giants do differently?
Who wants to go first?
You go first. You, since you're talking, Kat.
Well, everyone was just staring at each other, so I figured someone had to break the silence. Well, I don't want to see them do anything differently. I want to see them build on the offense against the worst defense in the league. I mean, everyone's panicking about Saquon, but I you said it earlier. Week three was the target point. Week three was the target point. If we can't go off against the Falcons defense, guys, we got a big, 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 big problem. Same thing for our defense. In terms of the matchup, I said this earlier today on the show I was on, but I mean, the games decide, the only way the Falcons beat us is if their receivers, if their skills guys just outdo our DBs who haven't looked great. They are great. They just haven't looked great. You know, we can't get toasted by the tight end. I think Pitts is going to go off either way, but if we can keep Ridley at bay and try to make a rookie beat us, you know, so be it. But I think this game for us plays into our favor strongly. It concerns me that the Giants are 3-point favorites. But aside from that, the Falcons don't really have a point, have a reason to be favored at all. I think they're one dimensional. I think if we shut down Ridley, we only got to worry about Pitts. And you know, Pitts hasn't hit it yet. I wouldn't be surprised if he has his career day against us, but I also don't think he's going to beat us. So I don't want to say I'm confident, you know, going into Sunday, but they can't fuck this up. They can't fuck this up. There's no reason to fuck this up.
Murph,
I need 3 sacks from the pass rush, at least. And I need 2 turnovers from the defense. Send the fucking house on Matt Ryan and wreak havoc on that guy, because I know we can. I know we can. We just have had some bad luck with 2 quick quarterbacks. Matt Ryan is a statue. If we don't sack that man 3 times, I'm going to have a serious issue.
Their O-line is bad, too, by the way. We want to talk about bad O-line. Yeah, their O-line's bad.
The DBs, man. I want them up on the line, up in Ridley and Pitt's face the entire damn game. Don't care. I don't want any of that soft zone shit unless we're winning by more than 7. And something to keep an eye on the offensive side of the ball, for me, A.J. Terrell, probably their best defender after Deion Jones. He is in concussion protocol, so that's something to keep an eye on. He's actually not a bad corner. So if he misses, Kenny Golladay coming out party, baby. Shut up all the haters. Kenny Golladay gets his first TD, and Saquon's got to get over 75 yards on the ground, man.
Dude, should be a Giants coming out party.
But I will say the Falcons did hold the Bucs under 100 yards on the ground.
Atlanta's pass offense, 14th. Atlanta's rush defense, I'm sorry, pass defense, 14th in the NFL. Their rush defense, 9th in terms of yards allowed. So,
for what it's worth, with Atlanta, 2 pick sixes make that game look a lot worse against the Bucs. 2 pick sixes late and 2 muff punts for the Falcons, too. Again, that's my point. The Falcons are going to give us opportunities to win the game. That's the thing. I think that it's going to be there for us to take it. We just got to do something with it. Like, we can't let this one slip away. We're going to have the opportunity to put them out of the water. We got to do it, man. They're not a good team.
Right game.
They're not a good team. And this is just a game. I know we're the Giants. It doesn't matter who we play, but like, this is just a game that shouldn't be close. And we'll see. We'll see how it turns out.
Dana?
Yeah, this is a game, and I'm not taking any team for granted, especially the way we've looked on defense so far this year. I'm not going to say we're definitely going to win, not making guarantees. But this is a game I need a convincing victory. I want a double-digit victory this week against the Atlanta Falcons. I want this team to start to make us feel a little bit better about how we felt about them going into the year, at least that we're going to be competitive week in, week out. Not that we weren't competitive last week, but a heartbreaking loss. The defenses look absolutely like trash. My keys on defense, be aggressive, man, but don't be overly aggressive. Be aggressive, be selectively aggressive, be smart. On offense, what I'm looking for in this game, man, I think the return of Evan Ingram could hopefully help open up some opportunities over the middle of the field, maybe with crossing patterns, things like that. Maybe you pull the linebacker, you know, with him running routes a little bit deeper. Maybe it opens up the middle of the field for crossing patterns like Tony, like Shepard. I want to see that sprinkled into the offense. And kind of like you said, man, Galladay, man, I'd like to see him be able to beat up on this defense, get some more confidence going with him, with Barkley. And I want you to run up the score, man. I want a confident victory this week. I want Daniel Jones to throw for 3 touchdowns. And I want us to feel a lot better about this offense going into week 4. So I expect a blowout. That's what I want the New York Giants to produce to week 3.
That's it, guys. You heard it here first from Tanner. Giants 76, Falcons 3.
I'll go 34-21, but all right.
Anytime I hear the word be aggressive, my wife was used to be a cheerleader. All I can think of is be aggressive, be aggressive. But all right, Tino, 10 days till many Saints of Newark drops. And I like that you're already in full Sopranos form. You got on the white tee. You got the Jesus cross hanging outside of your neck. Look at that. And you got a St. Tony poster. Look at that. That's beautiful. You're looking very Soprano-ish today, Tino.
I'll bring the gabagool to the game on Sunday for me and you. All right. Just know that. I'm going to bring the gabagool.
Oh, you guys are going to the game?
Yeah, we'll be there. That's unfortunately, awesome. We'll be there.
So that's going to wrap up this episode of Clapback Sports. Tino, not that you need any introduction, but we weren't able to introduce you. Tell everybody where they can find your YouTube channel.
I apologize. I was a little bit late, to be completely honest. Yeah, I got up watching a TV show and I didn't realize what time it was. But I appreciate you guys having me on the channel, man, or the podcast.
Yeah, consummate professional. Thank you.
The podcast, man. I appreciate all you guys, man. Anytime you – this week, if you guys are free, you're more than welcome to come on. I do a pregame show the night before I do a show, so you guys are more than welcome to come on if you want to come on my channel. But yeah, man, I appreciate you guys having me on. You guys are great guys. It was a pleasure getting to meet you. I didn't get to meet Murph, but I got to meet the other two. It was a pleasure getting to meet Maze and Tino at the game, and hopefully we get to do that again soon, and maybe the Eagles game if you guys are going. But must win game, man. Yeah, no, I didn't stress that enough throughout this podcast. It sucks having to cover this team when you know the season's over. And if I'm being honest, in terms of the playoffs, if we lose this week, 0-3 with a loss to the Falcons at home, like, it would be one thing if we were playing the Bucs and I could try to convince myself and be like, all right, 0-3, but we lost to a team we're supposed to lose to. Maybe we could recover. But when you got the Falcons week 3, you cannot lose this football game. This is a must-win game, especially coming off a loss in the manner of which we did with Washington. They need to bounce back up off that effort. I think they will. I think we'll get to 1-2, and then we got to find a way to win at least one out of our next 3 games. At Dallas, at New Orleans, and the Rams. And that will be a tall task, but one game at a time. Got to beat the Falcons first. But I appreciate you guys for having me on, man. And, let's talk Giants again soon.
Where exactly can they find their YouTube channel?
Oh, I should have said that. Entertainer Talking Sports. You spell with an A-H. If you guys haven't checked it out, please do so. And, and subscribe to this podcast, man.
Yeah, absolutely, because Tana said so. All right. No, I appreciate you coming on, Tanner. It's always a good time when you do. And, you get to unbutton yourself a little bit because we're a little bit more relaxed, a little loose over here. So
I didn't have to shave.
Yeah, and you don't have to shave. That's true. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Clapback Sports. Appreciate everyone for listening. Peace and love, everyone.